you know, like they're converging a little bit. But I went to a side event for VR enthusiasts. It's the VR meetup. It was at the Aussie bar called the Moose is Down There. It's the oddest place for this. I kind of spoke to some both like representatives from firms like Snapchat, but also kind of just general enthusiasts who are creating their own apps. There's a really nice, neat group based out of New Westminster, which is very close to here. They're creating a VR app, so in VR goggles and Quest 3 goggles, and it's teaching you how to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, this can be extended more broadly. You can have a VR app that helps you play really any kind of musical instrument, because you're not really supposed to play musical instrument by sight. You're supposed to play them by sound.
Yeah.
And having an immersive experience actually is really cool. But I also saw someone who's kind of... But also kind of, I'm just reminded of the way that, you know, like the wide availability of VR goggles at the consumer grade level is kind of changing the game on what you can really do with them. You can now kind of imagine one of these little robots, like little clones in your house, and, you know, your cat has a litter situation, and you can just use your VR goggles and, you know, your haptic feedback gloves, mm-hmm. and you can manipulate the clones almost naturalistically
right.
to go and scoop up the litter. And I was saying this to Jesse earlier, but, you know, Karl Marx, more than 150 years ago, talked about the alienation of labor. And the kind of alienation he talked about was social alienation, right? Your cat has a litter situation. You go hire someone to scoop up this litter. And it's not his cat or her cat. It's your cat. But that person's getting paid a monetary sum to mm-hmm. do this job. And that's social alienation. But now maybe with VR goggles and all these remote control things, it's kind of a physical alienation. You might be 50 miles away at the office. You might be at the daycare. You might whatever. And then you're manipulating your little robot or whatever to scoop up your cat's litter. Suddenly, it's there's no more social alienation. It's your cat, but it's physically alienated. So it's kind of an interesting switcheroo to what right. possibility that offers. And so that's one thing. A couple other really quick highlights are there's more and more really interesting tech ideas coming out of Vancouver. One of the signature events this year was on Tuesday night, the opening night, and all the big local VC firms and Western Canadian, really, they're showcasing their kind of star startup idea. Mm-hmm. And it used to be a pretty, you know, small event, and now this year it's gotten so big, I couldn't actually get in. So it's getting really, really interesting, really, really lively. It is insanely crowded if you go to something like the Night Summit, which is kind of everyone mills around Bento Center, but it's good vibes.
Cool.
So, if I could just weigh in a few things. You know, this virtual reality, I heard about it in something called the Panic Encyclopedia, one of the few books I bought.
Yeah.
I knew. It's called the Panic Encyclopedia, and it mentioned this virtual reality. And I knew about it since 1989. But what we didn't know, what I didn't know, what I personally didn't know, and maybe people like me, was how the internet, which is a very different thing than virtual reality, because people in the early 90s were talking about there's going to be virtual reality, there's going to be virtual reality, but they didn't see how there's something called the internet that was going to be much more a different concept. The other thing I want to bring up, on CBC Radio, our competition, they mentioned this. It's a blurb for a show, how the internet has gone down. I don't agree with that. I think the internet's getting better. I mean, because in every way, like, for example, getting access to older movies. There's stuff from the 90s, silent movies and 30s, 40s that I'm finally getting access to. And there's other things as well. So I don't think the internet is getting worse.
I think Peter actually makes a really interesting point. I just want to address it about virtual reality, which is that the words virtual reality is really misleading. I think the chief applications of VR technology is not going to give you a reality that's virtual, that's not based on the real world, but a different part of the real world's reality. One of the big, like 90% of the showcases around, for example, the Apple Vision Pro was showing you all these montages, like 360s, of scenery in Japan or Italy, places that you are not physically in, but places that are real. They're real experiences, to make them as real as possible. I think this idea of an actual virtual reality, is not, that is not based on any real world location or events or reference points, that's a lot closer to Mark Zuckerberg's idea of the metaverse. And that's kind of a world of its own. I don't find that too attractive. I don't find that super interesting. But I think VR is a different thing, even though the given the misleading name.
So what are some of the entries and stories you're going to be bringing forth in future shows?
Yeah, so I spoke, for example, with the Snapchat team, which was at the VR event. And Snapchat, as we know, they have these VR glasses, and they're pretty cool. You know, like, the technology is maybe not the most cutting edge, but, like, they have just a really fun, cute little addictive games. Like, you know, space ping pong, you know, just cool stuff. I also spoke, with a couple of local startups. I think I mentioned one that was doing kind of like a VR guitar situation. But also, people are really doing kind of interesting things with, I spoke with a company out of Victoria, which managed to get a new game, like, approved on PlayStation in 6 months, which is unheard of. Yeah. Normally it takes 2 or 3 years. I just want to see how they do it. And a couple other things. So, you know, we'll see. There's a couple of things coming down the pipe. I also spoke with a local Vancouver guy who is now based in Mountain View, California, where Google is, and he's a local VC. But it's interesting how the micro VC scene, which is kind of the fertilizer of the tech world, has kind of proliferated in Vancouver. It used to be that we didn't have very much venture capital, and now, you know, this time you see all these venture capitalists who are kind of maybe based out of Vancouver, maybe based out of California, or maybe kind of in between, but they're going back and forth. It seems very active. It's like honeybees. So it's very interesting.
I'd like to bring up something very briefly.
Yeah. Yep.
I feel it's very important when we talk about the internet. People pay Google to be in top of the actual list. Like, if you want to sell watches, and, like, I think it's 1 cent a hit or something, and then you figure, well, if I get enough, if I pay enough, pay, you know, bounces how many people buy it. So actually, Google is not on the up and up because people are paying to be on top of the list.
And I think I think the changes they've made are that they've prioritized and highlighted a lot of paid ads. The actual search is still, I think, pretty legit, but, you know, how they present that isn't always as clear. I don't want to get into this whole topic because we've got other things to get to. And
I know, but I just wanted to briefly...
I mean, the more humorous example is now stores naming themselves to be more easily searchable. Like, you would have a Thai place named the Thai place near me, right? Or the, you know, like, barbers near me kind of a thing.
I mean, well, I think I'm probably not the only one who, because of those changes, doesn't find the Google search nearly as useful or beneficial as it used to. And I really wonder about the whole idea of, you know, they do the whole AI scraping of the search results and they put a summary at the top of the results. You never have to go to the page. And doesn't that kind of eat away at the whole sort of relationship there? Because now Google's no longer sending people to folks' website. They're just taking that information and presenting it, so you never need to go there. And that seems like
I just want to quickly address that, because I think one thing is, I'm not sure how much it does have to do with Google as opposed to things just gradually more and more living on apps now as opposed to the open internet. And you see this with Chinese apps a lot. They don't really live on the internet. They live in super apps like WeChat. And to what extent these things are catalogable and searchable is a question, right?
All right. Well, we're out of time for that. This is... We'll be up with Gardening with Embark in just a minute and a half.
This is Bird Note. I'm Nicole Jackson, an environmental educator and nature enthusiast. I visited my mom back in May 2021, and it turned into something so magical. As I arrived to greet her, I noticed a couple of the usual suspect birds hopping around on the pavement. American robins, starlings, and blue jays. But then I saw flashes of yellow, bright orange, and black among the conifers and oak trees in the yard. I screamed, "Oh my gosh, that's a Blackburnian warbler." My mom looked at me with confusion. She asked, "What are you looking at?" I said, "You have warblers everywhere up in the trees." I showed her each bird I was seeing on Google Images and the All About Birds website. She was amazed that she has such beautiful tiny birds in her backyard. We talked about how I got into birding and how I learned to identify them. By then, she was hooked and asked how she could learn more about birds. I showed her the Merlin Bird ID app on my phone and created an account for her. Her face lit up when she documented her first bird sighting. I was absolutely beaming seeing her expression after listing a bird. I will never forget this experience, as it was the first time my mom got to witness my joy from birding and created her own. Black Birders Week concludes today. To learn more, follow the hashtag Black Birders Week on social media and visit birdnote.org. I'm Nicole Jackson.
Welcome to Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio is Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society and our resident gardening expert here at CGSF and at Embark. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So it's week 22. We're getting
correct. Yep.
Very deep into the spring, and summer is just a few weeks away.
Three more weeks, and summer will be here, June the 21st. So, yes, looking forward for a warm summer.
Yeah, and we've been getting some typical Vancouver spring weather lately with cold rain, hot sun, mix and match.
Yes, it's quite an extraordinary weather, changing so frequently from one day to the next. So yesterday we had this cold rain in the morning, and now it's warming up. It's going to be sunny again, and tomorrow it's going to rain again. So on, off. Yeah. I think we as a gardeners are confused because we want to go out and do things, and we are just straying, and the plants as well. What is going on in here? Shall we grow? Shall we stay? So that is exciting of gardening. Gardening is quite dynamic. Every year is different. Never is static. So keeps us gardeners always thinking how we are going to react to what the weather gives to us.
Yeah. But today we're going to talk about something that might not seem that interesting or exciting, but is really important.
Correct. So as the weather warms up and the needs for watering increases, and we should remember that urban gardening very much depends on the municipal water system, tap water, and we want to optimize the tap water. We don't want to waste. I remember that I think we already started water restrictions from May to October in the city of Burnaby. So we have to be very conscious about optimizing the water that we have. And one of those that helps us to optimize is mulching. Mulching is any object or material that can be used in order to protect the soil. So again, if we are gardening with nature, not against nature, we garden with nature, taking lessons from nature. We know that nature itself protects all its soil with vegetation. On the contrary, we gardeners tend to keep the soil nice and bare, just the crops popping out. So we need to...
I guess you're talking about in nature, because of course often there's either other ground cover plants or, you know, all the foliage that's fallen down, leaves and other stuff that's sort of laying on the ground.
Correct. Yeah. So we tend to go a bit more into the janitorial process, everything, remove everything, keep the soil bare. That is not good. So mulching comes into play. So mulching is any material or object that can be used to cover the ground. Could be wood chips, could be... leaves, could be pebbles, could be gravel, could be an old carpet, could be the black landscape fabric that we have. So anything that can help us to protect the soil from three things. One will be from the raindrops. Yesterday we had this heavy rain in the morning, and the rain loosened the fine particles of soil, which clogged the pores in the soil. So, and later when yesterday we had in the afternoon this nice sun, and the top layer of the soil creates a crust. So air and water won't exchange. Right. So it's kind of baked. So we want to avoid that. So by putting a layer of leaves or mulch, the raindrops will hit that and slowly drip into the soil. So it's kind of a nice cushion for the tin drops not to hit hard the soil.
Right. And if you see that kind of crust, you want to break that up then, right?
Yes, that will be the next. But we will have to wait 48 hours after the last rain to go and break that crust. Because working after a rainy day, the soil is still soggy, the soil will stick to your tools, and rather than improving the soil, you are damaging the structure of the soil. Yeah. So that is the other thing is the mulch prevents us from losing water when we have sunny days. So we go water early in the morning, and the soil, because it's bare, it warms up faster, and all the water that it was retaining is evaporated. So by having mulch, the soil keeps a bit cooler than bare soil and retains the water, so the evaporation doesn't happen too much. So it's kind of a nice protection. And as well, nice weather, warm temperatures, humidity in the soil, nice environment for weeds to grow. We know we gardeners don't like to much spend time weeding, so a nice layer of mulch will help us to prevent weeds. Now, how thick a mulch layer should be? Well, in our case, we use leaves that we collected last fall, so we have 2 inches of leaves, no more than that, because otherwise the water won't get through there, through the layer of mulch, so the rainwater don't get there, or the water that we are doing takes time to get into the soil, so we don't want to have a thicker layer of mulch. For pads, make a thicker layer as you can so weeds don't grow. And if the weeds grow, they will grow in that thick layer of mulch, which are easy to pull the weeds from root. So that's preventing the weeds, preventing soil water evaporation from the soil, protecting the soil from the raindrops. And as well, yesterday, one of our garden beds, unfortunately, receives all the drip from the soil, from the roof, and just all these the soil splashes into the vegetables. And again, that is everything. All the garden bed is splashed with soil all over the place. The vegetables are dirty. So by putting a layer of mulch, we prevent that, and as well, we prevent plants getting sick.
Good.
And finally, if we use organic mulch, we are as well creating a nice habitat for invertebrates, earworms, millipedes, centipedes. And so that habitat as well helps to decompose the habitat created for these invertebrates. They decompose the mulch, which releases nutrients that feed the soil. So that is as well very important that to use an organic material. We can use pebbles, we can use gravel, but this is a choice. I will keep away myself from black plastic or the landscape fabric. I have seen many people just laying this weed blocker. But it's plastic, it's black, it gets hot when the sun directly hits it. So, water will evaporate regardless. So having a straw or having good leaves, that will be very much useful.
Excellent. Well, I mentioned at the top how mulch didn't seem very exciting, but when I hear you talk about all that it does sound exciting because it sounds like it's really saving the gardener a lot of work. I mean, among other things, I mean, it's good for the plants, it's good for the soil, but it's also saving you a lot of work because it's, you know, as you say, it's discouraging weeds, it's protecting the soil. So it really is exciting.
It is. It's exciting. And then as well, we over the fall here in campus, we are always collecting the leaves from the trees. And we are always finding how to store it because we know that for the coming season, we will use not only for mulching the soil, but as well for feeding the compost, the composter bin, because we will put all our greens that comes from the garden and we have to add some browns, which usually we use leaves. So again, it's material that in nature, the nature replenishes itself. In the garden, working with nature, we try to replicate what nature does. So collect all those leaves, trim it as possible. Otherwise, just store it in a container that that allows the composition, the bottom one, but the upper ones will still dry, and you can use that for feeding the compost and mulching your garden beds.
Excellent. Well, really so important, mulch.
Very much important. And that's one thing that we are trying to bring more to our gardens, because as well, we need to learn to use mulch, because, you know, when we cover our garden bed, let's say it's an empty garden bed, we will put a layer of mulch, and we need to plant, we need to remove the mulch, make a pocket for the plant, for the seedling, put the seedling in there, and cover back with mulch. And the mulch shouldn't be too close to the plant, because again, you know, is a habitat for all invertebrates.
Yeah.
Invertebrates as well love very young plants.
Right.
So the other thing could be that it offers as well a habitat for slugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, there's another issue. Like, say, I just put mulch, and now the slugs are feasting from my cabbages, from my broccoli. And like, okay. So what we found is that we can find a crop where the slugs are constantly eating from. So it happens that last year we had a kohlrabi, and all the slugs were eating the kohlrabi while leaving along all the cabbages, broccolis along. So, yeah, so that's as well. As you visit the garden, you start identifying, like, oh, this, what happened with this plant? It seems that all the slugs from around come and eat from it.
Yeah.
I will just keep it there. Yeah.
Kind of like a bait slugs, plant.
Yes, a sacrificial plant, while the others are protected and growing fantastic. Yeah. So there are traits that we have to balance. We cannot control who comes or who doesn't come to the garden. The garden is a habitat for all the living things, and we just share our plants with them too, so create a healthy habitat.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for this lesson today, Pablo.
Glad to share it. I'm happy to share these little things that we happen with our gardens.
Great. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society. He's the gardens manager for Embark. Embark runs education programs in many areas, but including in gardening, and you can get involved. Tell us how people can find out more about that.
So Embark is a student organization, not for profit. We are based in the Student Union Building, SFU, Abu Dhabi campus. You can visit us anytime. We're in the office almost every day. And we have two streams of interest for you. Could be food justice, which includes gardening and developing gardening skills. And the other is climate change, which as well intersects with the gardening. Gardening is as well interacts with the weather, as you have heard us. We're talking always about the weather and the climate change and the effect that it has in the period of production in the garden. You can follow us on our website, embarksustainability.org, or to our social media channels at embarksustainability.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll be back again next week.
Correct. Let's have a nice weekend and be in the garden out.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we will be back with more Gardening with Embark next week. Up now is Peter R.H. and his proposition that Canada does not need a military.
Yes. Now, I want to go on the record for something not totally unrelated. I'm sending this to all the MPs in the Metro Vancouver area, a photocopy, hand mail. And it says here, an open letter to the members of Parliament of the Metro Vancouver Area and Vancouver Better Business Bureau. When Trump comes to Canada for the G7 conference, I want him arrested on behalf of the Canadian Better Business Bureau for the operation of Trump University in Canada. And it's got my contact information. So if somebody does it, remember it was my idea because I made them do it. It was based on the fact that technocracy guy, he overspent what they gave him. They said if he goes to the United States, he would be prosecuted for the what he does, but he's in Canada, and technocracy doesn't operate in the United States.
Okay.
Anyway,
so we got so 5 minutes.
That is on the record in case I do it. It's me.
I think, or Right Honourable Prime Minister, and I use this very cheekily, because he seems to be obsessed with his honors and titles and so forth. I think the statistic that he is very interested in, and he quotes this a lot, is 75 cents of every Canadian dollar that goes toward the defense is spent toward the United States. It goes to the United States.
And that is correct.
He is very interested in changing that. That's why he is very interested in joining European defense partnerships, ramping up domestic production. I am not as sure if you convince him on the merits of unilateral disarmament, although I think it's worth a try, certainly. But I think that's the main thing he's probably looking at. You know, how do you get the 75 cents down to like 50 cents or something like that?
Right. Okay. Well, we only have 5 minutes, so you got to get into your bidder. We're going to run out of time before
anyway,
we start.
Why don't you think
Canada should have?
Well, what I'm going to bring up is people say, but what if there's an emergency? I think we should have emergency services. Mm-hmm. We should convert it to emergency services. And if it's converted to emergency services, then maybe we can have no forest fires whatsoever in Canada. Because think about it. I mean, whether it's climate change or not, I think there's a way of just putting your muscle to the mind and doing it. And maybe that's what we should. And maybe the United States will appreciate that a lot more, not getting all smoky every year or something.
Right.
So the other thing is that it's sort of based on, the other thing is that we have this sort of thing where, okay, if we're stricken by, I guess, North Korea, mainland China, or Russia, then the United States comes in and strikes them back. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be good. Well, it's a meaningless thing. I mean, it's silly. So I say get every military operation outside of Canada. Don't be part of this brand new thing he's proposing, the Golden Dome. I mean, it's interesting. It's supposed to cost...
What about a Diamond Dome?
Well, that's okay, Stephen. You can come in once in a while. $175 billion, and we're supposed to put $61 billion or become part of them. And it's just another variation of the what was colloquially called Star Wars, which was the strategical defense
initiative. SDI.
Yeah, and... actually, in 1993, it was changed to BMDO, Ballistic Missile Defense Operation. So I don't know what happened to that. So that sort of went by the wayside. What's interesting is that they have missiles in Europe. This is interesting. Belgium, Netherlands, Turkey, Germany, Italy has atomic, the H-bomb, which they say it's an open secret. Openly, it's like Israel. It's an open secret they have the hydrogen bomb, but we'll never say publicly. So I think it's silly. I actually think supposedly the Cold War ended in 1991, they should have made a deal with Russia. The United States has said in exchange for getting all your atomic weaponry out, which is basically the hydrogen bomb, we will do infrastructure programs. And it would have been a better world if they took my idea, quite frankly.
I fundamentally disagree. I think
so. You got about a minute.
Okay, disagree with me, but next week I'm going to tell how you're wrong. Go ahead.
I think if you look at the history of nuclear weapons, it's not clear to me that fewer countries having fewer nuclear weapons actually leads to less war. A friend of mine who was very focused on this topic said, you know, ultimately, you know, you look at situations like Russia, Ukraine, you look at situation in the Middle East, it's not clear to me that not having nuclear weapons, well, the nuclear weapons possibility exists for the other state, it leads to a stable set of outcomes. It doesn't lead to a stable equilibrium. So I don't really fundamentally believe in denuclearization for that
reason. If the United States, for a while, the United States had a monopoly on the atomic bomb, because the hydrogen bomb was done in 1952, actually. And you can't have the super bomb or the Q bomb of the most that roared, or Plan 9 from outer space as the sun bomb. Oh, the H bomb is the biggest one. But they had a monopoly up to September 1949. And if the only country, the United States, had it, then we'd be fine.
I think if the United States had the monopoly on it, the world would actually become in a war, because nobody else
Which is like how it is now. Trump wants to take us over.
I think.
And we don't have a H bomb in Canada, by the way.
Worse, a much worse set of wars if only the United States had the M bomb.
And right. We just have our tariff wars, don't we?
That's all the time we have for today for Speak Up. Thanks for tuning in. That was Peter R.H. and Stephen Fan getting hot and heavy in the studio here.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Stay tuned for Democracy Now. If you ever want to comment on what we're doing here, 778-782-2573. Send us a text.
Okay.